Today we gather like we do in wonderfully grand numbers. Thank you so much for coming to pray today. We gather with Christians, Catholics all around the world to celebrate what is for us our own day of atonement, you might say, when we call to mind the startling truth of the fact that the only Son of God, the only begotten one, Jesus of Nazareth, died, that God himself died, that he offered up his life for all of us. This is indeed Good Friday. So it's good to be here. At the centerpiece of Good Friday is the Good Friday liturgy, so here we are, and at the centerpiece of liturgy, it's dominated by the Passion of John, which you just heard proclaimed. It's a lovely portrait of the last few hours of the life of the Savior. And the liturgy is also dominated by the act of venerating the cross, which you've done on this day for a long, long time. These are ancient rituals today, among the oldest we have in the church, that survive all the way to the current day from way back in Christian memory. So Good Friday, at the center of which is the liturgy, center of which is the Passion and the Veneration. And what undergirds the Passion and the Veneration might also be yet one more piece, one more layer, let's call it the deepest layer. And to put kind of a finger on it or a fine point on it, it would be this, it'd be the matter of choice. Choice is what's going on in these acts, Passion, Veneration. Choices are at work all over the place, in the text, in the ritual today. I'll land on four of them, four choices. How about that? To frame our liturgy today and the whole day in the context of a very, well, let's say long year for us here, right? Choice number one that I'll land on has to do with the mob, with the crowd that assembles right at the base of Pontius Pilate's portico, his courtyard in the praetorium, and they have to choose about a prisoner. They choose Barabbas, whose name in Hebrew means son of the Father, over Jesus, who is, of course, the authentic son of the Father. Barabbas, Jesus. There's a choice in front of these people. Who was Barabbas? John says of him very simply today in one little line, he was a revolutionary. The other Gospels fill in a little more detail, but we know what this means from getting behind the text. Barabbas would have been, simply put, a rioter. He's a street fighter. He would have been among the group of people that lived right in first century Palestine in Jerusalem, who were so discontent with Roman occupation, so discontent with the tax situation, so discontent with the status quo of their nation, so restless to take their nation, their politics, and their faith, which were all one thing, to the next level, that they chose to engage, whenever they possibly could, in armed street riots against the Romans. They were the enemies of the Roman establishment. The temple was not keen on them because, as the temple was concerned, if the riots kept breaking out, the Romans would make life for the temple very hard. So these rioters were in a little class with themselves. They were also called, depending on who you ask, probably the zealots, maybe. Okay? Jesus would have had two disciples among this group, Judas and Simon. They would have also belonged to the same group of rioters. So here is the rioter on the balcony, taken prisoner because he had been doing, well, what, rioting. Probably killed a Roman soldier or two, we're not sure, but that would make sense to have him in custody like he was. And Pilate, Roman-appointed governor of the territory, says to the crowd before him, which one do you want? You want the guy over here on my right, this Nazarene, with his invisible kingdom, who relies on spiritual power, on invisible entities, who's kind of a, let's face it, a sheep. Or do you want this guy, who we all know what he did, who I arrested? Which one do you want back? So the choice was in front of them. We know how they chose. In mind, what they had was their politics, the quick route for their future, the pragmatic route. They put their hope in a man who was going to give them in the very short, immediate term what they thought was a solution to their problems of their nation and of their households and of their people. They chose the violent one. They chose the rioter. They chose the street fighter. They chose the one who stood for the politics of the mob, who wanted to foment and who you wanted to use violence to usher in some sort of religious political kingdom. Lest we condemn them for choosing him over the Son of Man, the authentic Son of Man, not the false one with the same name, Barabbas. The thing of it is, I think oftentimes we do much the same thing all throughout human history. Fallen humanity has always done the same thing. We've always chosen the short term, the immediate thing, the pragmatic thing, the practical thing, the earthly stuff, the material solution, whatever it is that we think is going to guarantee us the fast results when God doesn't move fast enough for us. We're always landing on the side of, let's just face it, violence or activism or pushing or prodding or poking or fighting back or swinging back. We always push things forward in the very earthly, horizontal, flat kind of realm. And the spiritual stuff usually gets pushed to the side. It's for the pacifists. It's not very attractive, Jesus' method. It doesn't seem to get us very far. It doesn't go fast enough. It doesn't topple enough governments or change our tax status or fix our broken education system or whatever you want to call the problem, right? We never want to go with just the spiritual. It's too mushy or something. We're the pragmatists. That means that we are for Barabbas a lot of the time. I am, you are. Our culture has been for Barabbas for a while too. We've had this dominating our headlines for a while now. This whole mob mentality is around us in different kinds of ways, shapes, and forms. It's the mentality of the mob. It's the one of Barabbas, of the crowd, on that fateful Good Friday before Pilate's balcony. Choice number one. Choice number two, Pilate, who represents Caesar, who represents the civil order, who represents public society, public good, who represents the status quo, who represents our jobs and our systems and our politics and economics, our established medical, scientific, agricultural, computer, technological practices. He's the system, he's the man, okay? He has to make a choice as someone who's running a territory. His choice is, do I satisfy the crowd or not? You heard him say it, and John pushes the point very strong on his passion. Pilate says to the crowd, I don't think he's guilty. Are you sure? He asked him like four or five times, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? So his choice is, do I do the pragmatic political thing and make the crowd happy? Do I give in to the mob? Do I give in to the unrest? Do I try and calm the riot this way and just placate the crowd and throw them who they want back, the rioter among the rioters? Or do I do the hard thing, the politically inconvenient thing, the faith thing, and go with this guy over here, the innocent one, who I can't figure out what's wrong with him, but they don't like him? We know how he goes. Pilate does what any good politician does. He goes with the majority. He says, well, that's what they want, fine. I wash my hands of it in Matthew's gospel, in John's text too. Here, he's your problem, not mine anymore. How easy it is for us as a society, as persons and as institutions to do the same kind of stuff. You know, we will often side with the majority whether they're right or not. We get swept up in mob currents whether they're right or not. We get caught up in grand ideas of the group whether they're right or not. We all do it. We're all influenced in different ways by this very same kind of thing and how lonely it is to be in charge of anything, a family, a parish, a state, a city, a nation, like Pilate was, and say to ourselves, what do I do? I know what's just. I know whose side I ought to be on, but I just can't make myself do it. I need to get reelected. Or whatever it is, right? I want the status quo to continue because I just can't handle everything blowing up, so I'm just going to go along with it and give in to everybody's pressure to do the other thing, even though I don't really want to do it in my heart. Happens to us all the time. That's what sin is on one level. It's just giving in to, let's call it, peer pressure en masse. Choice number two, Pilate. Go along with the crowd, do the right thing. the crowd wins. Lots and lots of times in our history, from way back until right now, the crowd seems to win more than it should. Is the crowd always bad? Nope. Majority always wrong? No. But in this case, they were. They were. Choice number three. This time, it's the Lord's. What is his choice in the entire situation? What does God choose to do with this whole mess, okay, of the pragmatists and the rioters and the innocent ones and this group and that group and the messes of our social systems and our households and our personal choices and all that's so wonky in our fallen world? What does God choose to do? He chooses to let it be on one level. He chooses to be quiet. He stands very silent before Pontius Pilate. Doesn't say a whole lot. Doesn't try and convince the crowds, wait. He has a whole other way to do it. He chooses the unthinkable. He actually submits to it. And he goes along with it. And he chooses to allow himself to be falsely condemned. In all the ways that we tend to pick victims these days and kind of cultural heroes who we think stand on the side of the oppressed, the fact is there's really only been in history one truly innocent person who's ever actually been beat up and convicted. It's the one on the cross. Everybody else has sinned. I don't care who they are. He is the only innocent victim ever. What does he say? Fine. Take thee. If that's what it takes to bend your system from the inside out, to fix the social order, to mend what's broken, to bend things around love and sacrifice, if that's what it requires to stop the riots and the violence and the group politics and the messes in your houses and your hearts and your offices and your communities, if it takes somebody giving in as the innocent victim, God says, I'll be it. Take me. Fine. What does God choose? He could have, with a swing of his hand, smote them all right there on the spot. But instead, he gives over his hand and says, here, just nail them. Just nail me. Makes you happy? Go ahead. God chooses love. He chooses self-sacrifice. He chooses humiliation. He chooses the small route, the quiet route, the really, really long game, not the immediate short-term Barabbas one. He says to the world, put your hope on me, whose love is eternal, whose mercy is total, whose judgment is perfect, whose innocence is clear, who allows the rest of this to continue on like it does because I got another way to fix it. It's not your way, it's my way. My kingdom, he says, is not of this world, but I choose that one. God's choice on Good Friday is to die out of love for us, his people. And he does it over and over and over again. All the way until he comes again in glory. He will die every time. He says, if that's what it takes to make you guys happy, I'll do it. I will do it to show you another way. And eventually my way is going to win. It's just going to take a long time. But I'm going to win. My way will win, not the rioters, my way. But it takes death to self. Fourth choice, last one. This time about not so much the John we just heard, the gospel, but about the veneration. On Good Friday for a long time, way back in the church, in the liturgy, the cross has been held open for the faithful to come and venerate. There is a choice made today to come forward and venerate the cross or not. Now, I'm not talking as much about that choice. Today one can, because of our particular health circumstances, venerate from the pew if you want to today, or do it the regular way. We'll get to that in a second. So that's one choice. But regardless of how one venerates today, either from the safety of your pew or right up close in person to put your lips to the wood, either way, when one venerates the cross, one chooses to do things the Lord's way. Not the conventional way, not the pragmatic way, not the violent way, not the cultural way, not the easy way, not the popular way, the Lord's way. To kiss the cross, to touch the cross, to embrace the cross, to see it from afar if you want today and love it from a distance, whatever. To do that is to say, I choose that as my way. And I set aside the ways of the world to embrace another way to understand reality, in which God is supreme, the spiritual is everything, and the pragmatic is, well, just that, it's only pragmatic. It's just a short-term fix. I choose to die to my sins, to my appetites, to my passions, to my self-centered worldview, to my quick and easy pathways, to my hot-headed solutions, to my riot mentality. I choose to die to all of that if I kiss the cross today. I don't choose the earthly way. I choose the Lord's way. And his way is definitely the harder way. It's so hard, in fact, that every year the church asks us to come together like this on the Day of Atonement, Good Friday, and say, let's renew this choice again. God's chosen you. We must choose him and his way. The only thing that's going to make us do that, to be honest, I mean, I'll speak for myself, I guess. What on earth would make me want to come forward and kiss a piece of wood, which I will do in a second in front of all of you, and in so doing decide that I'm not going to go the easy route, which I'd really rather do, let's be honest. What would make me choose the other way, the Lord's way? The fact that he chose me and you. The love of Good Friday has to move our hearts to make a different kind of choice. Nothing else is going to bend us, push us, move us. We have to drink in the absolute profound love of this moment, of the day in Palestine, on an afternoon a long time ago on the cross. Drink it in, be moved by it, and when I realize what that means, then I kiss the cross. God has chosen me. He's chosen you, who deserve none of it. That moves me to choose him again and again and hopefully again. That's it. That's the whole deal, right? Choice is at the center of everything on Good Friday. God has chosen us. God has chosen us over and over again. And he asks us to do something remarkable and life-giving, to choose him, to choose his cross, to choose in that way to make him our King and our Lord.